So my name is Immaculée Libagiza. I was born in Rwanda, in this little country in Central of Africa, Central East. And I live in New York City in America with my family. I'm married and have two children. I a writer now. I used to work with United Nations until 2006 when I wrote my first book, Left to Tell. So I was asked to resign so that I can speak about this, which I didn't know what was coming next, but for 13 years now, I have been invited to speak almost at least average once a week. So it's still going on. I haven't gone back to work with United Nations, and I love it. I have written now 9 books, so I continue. Yeah, I continue to write, and I just love it, love it. And I do have charities. I go back to Rwanda to help other people who are still suffering in many different ways. So yeah, that's what I'm doing.
So, yeah, Immaculée, you have a very fascinating story. You were brought up in Rwanda. And so my question is, what is the background, and have you been somehow prepared for suffering that suddenly, or did it suddenly happen? Like, was it like a flash from the bright sky, or was it like you realized, oh yeah, there is something evil coming at me?
Oh, thank you again. Good question. So I grew up in Rwanda, in my village. I grew up seeing people who loved each other. You know, if you, as a child, if I was tired, I slept wherever I was, and they gave me a bed. And then evening, they would pick me up and take me back home. So I grew up in a place where I felt people trusted each other. In my family, we talked about people who needed help. You know, people who were going through bad situation, how we can be of help for them. We spoke about the good things and weddings and parties were happening in the country. We had a lot of tradition. When a baby's born, literally all the children have to go to that house to be fed and to welcome the baby. So I grew up in a place like that. Nothing really prepared me for what was coming fully. However, 2 years before the genocide, that's when I started to see that there was changes. I remember there was a radio we thought was private radio, but later we found out it was actually founded by the leaders of the country. And this radio, we named it Hate Radio. But I remember the journalists, they used to act like they were drunk. So they would say things like, about our tribe, they will say, that tribe, they are not human beings. They have horns, they have tails. And they will laugh. And then they will say, give me scotch. And they will act like they are drinking, like whiskey. And then they will end up just talking so many horrible things about us. So it became like jokes. But I always wondered, why is nobody stopping that? This is a country where being kind to one another matters. That is a country where if you insulted somebody, even neighbors alone can come to help to bring justice to the situation. Why is nobody doing something? This is not a place where there's just chaos. So that was preparing me, what is going to happen? If things keep going bad like this, what is going to happen? I also remember that a year before the genocide, there was a lot of stealing, and again, people would go unpunished. I still remember one time I was in a bus. I saw a man, a bandit on the street, pick up a lady in their hands, remove her shoes, remove her clothes, and they run in her bag. And I said, where is the police? The police was watching, actually. And again, I grew up in a place where you don't say something bad. You don't, you know, you have to help the older person when they are weak, the sick person. What was going on? So the evil was escalating. That's what I saw. And that always made me question what is going to happen. We knew in Rwanda there was two tribes, Hutus and Tutsi, and we knew our tribe was not well loved. We grew up, and if you didn't have a scholarship, they told you it's because you are Tutsi. But it was almost a part of the whole policy what was there. And I remember my parents used to tell us, well, since you are not well liked politically, you just have to behave better twice. You know, twice better than the other people. You have to study harder, twice harder than the other people, so that you will have good credit, because as a tribe, we are not being liked. So we never had to have this resentment or angry or expecting to talk about what worse can happen. But when the genocide started, I still remember my mind went back to that radio. Everything that was escalating slowly. This must be what was being talked about. This must be the reason why evil was taking over this much. But what happened during the genocide? It was beyond my wildest dream. I never imagined such pain. I never imagined people becoming evil, like another human being would wish to harm you, to hurt you, to make you suffer. It was evil that I didn't think was possible, but I definitely saw it.
Wow. So within only 2 years, the whole society changed, and suddenly the genocide started. And so how have you personally experienced the start of the genocide, and how did you have to suffer? And how did it feel for you, all this?
The suffering was a lot, and it was, again, like I said, the worst thing. So when the genocide started first, we put on the radio, literally one morning, we woke up and they said the president of the country was killed. And within 15 minutes, we started to hear on radio that families were being killed. So it wasn't one person or two people. It was, the radio were reporting things like 8 children and mom and dad have just been killed. 5 children and mom and dad have just been killed. And I still remember my father one time, he said, this never happened before, where they kill a whole family, which of course is the reason why they call it a genocide. It was actually the attempt to eliminate a whole group of people. They have made lists, they have prepared it. They knew completely what was going to follow. Maybe when the president dies, then what were they going to do from right after that? And that's what they have started. That alone was very scary. So I remember by the second day the whole genocide had started, my dad asked me to go to hide to the neighbor who was from the other tribe and who was, of course, a good man. You know, and I really have to say this, not everyone was bad in the other tribe, which is, we know in the world, there's no such a thing as bad people just because they come from that country, that race, that tribe. There is always people who choose to do bad in every group of people. So I remember my father used to tell us, don't judge people and put them in boxes. If you judge people like that, you will miss out many angels in your life. You don't know who God is going to send you to help you when you need them most. And then if you have judged that whole group of people, you will chase away the whole group of people, anyone who look like them, who speak like them. So we used to think, oh, dad is teaching again. But when the genocide started and he sent me to this man who was supposed to be our enemy, you know, and yet he trusted him because he knew his heart. Because he had made himself, you know, he was a friend of his. So I went to the neighbor. The only thing I left with, I remember, you know, my family came from a Catholic family. We practiced faith. My father gave me the rosary, and that's all I left with. I went to this man. I was still thinking it was going to be 2-3 days. So I went to the man. He was actually a Protestant pastor, and he put me in a small bathroom, 3 by 4 feet. I remember the first time he said, stay here until the troubles goes away. So he went back, and I remember I was complaining. How can this be? This is too bad. How can I sit in this 3 by 4 feet? I mean, 3 days before, I had a scholarship in college. 3 days before, I had my own room in my parents' house. 3 days before, I felt life was good. And now I was in 3 by 4 feet. So he said, sit here until troubles goes away. And he came back, as I was complaining, with 5 more women. Later, he came back with 2 more women. So we were 8 people in 3 by 4 feet. That is really when the terrible suffering started to happen to me in ways that I never thought. All the things I was watching outside, oh, a war is happening, this is terrible, but I have not yet experienced the suffering until I was in that bathroom. So there was, at so many levels, suffering. Emotional, physical, and spiritual too. So physically, to sit in this 3 by 4 feet, oh, I had so many questions. Why this can happen? Who is putting me through this? How can they do this? I am innocent. And why do I have to hide? This is in my village. This is not even somebody, a stranger, who came from far away. So the questions I was asking myself, I felt they were putting me deeper even in suffering. Because the more the situation was unfair, the more my suffering was justified, the more angry I got. And the more angry I got, the more pain I felt. I still remember, I couldn't even remember how to smile. I felt like my whole face was twisted, you know? I wished I was innocent. I wished I wasn't even thinking about what was happening. Like I'm not even capable to see what is happening. So I can enjoy one more day, because it was just so painful to see the injustice that was happening there. And then I will move from anger, which was just haunting me everywhere from my head to toes. Then I will move to fear. What can happen if they find me? What can happen if we don't leave? If they kill my people? And then I will start to suffer just the fear of what can happen, the loss I might have, which in the end I end up having it. But the pain was already there thinking about that. So the emotions of fear, anger, and they hurt differently. They were so overwhelming and it just was so hurtful. And then I would feel impatient and I would be like, I can't take another day here. And with that alone, it was painful also. So there was a lot of pain in different ways. And then the man who was hiding us, he will bring us food. And the food he was able to bring us, because he told his children that he sent us away. So his children didn't know that we're there. We had to be absolutely quiet. He couldn't bring enough food to us. He will bring food like at night on a plate. The leftovers of his children, really. And he did that not because he wanted to give us that, but that what he could afford, because nobody knew that we're there. So he will bring us one plate with the leftovers he took from the garbage, and eight of us would have to share that. So I was really hungry. I never felt hunger like that. It was like a knife in your stomach. Before I was hungry, but not like that. I remember one time we spent 3 days without eating anything at all, not even water. So it was painful in many ways.
Wow. It's hard to imagine how you could survive at all this. So how did you survive, especially as also your murderers were on your feet, so to say? They wanted to kill you, I think, yeah.
So we got to a time, so all this time in that bathroom, I thought it was going to be 2-3 days. So the more the situation got worse, the more, of course, we were in pain. But I remember a week after I was in the bathroom, I asked the man to put a radio outside. And that's really when I knew that the government now was on radio, calling everyone to kill every one of my tribe. So they gave order to start searching every one of my family. They gave order to start searching people of our tribe. They were giving prizes to people who killed more people in stadium, in the churches, in the public places. And that when the pain became even worse. I remember one time they came to search for us. There were 300 to 400 people. They came inside the house, all around the house, and they started to search everywhere. The man who was hiding us, of course, he couldn't come to the bathroom, but he's the one who told us later what happened. But in that time they were searching, I thought my life was over. And another thing was hurting was, again, that kind of inner voice that tells you the worst that can happen. So I felt something was telling me, open the door, end the torture. They're going to find you anyway. Why hide? But there's always bad and good voice. One nicer voice in me also was telling me, do not open the bathroom. Ask God to help you. No matter how painful it is, don't end your life. Keep asking, don't end your life. So I remember in that time, I turned to God. I literally turned to God, not as a Catholic, not even as a Christian. I turned to God as a creator to the one who have created it. I remember asking God with every cell of my body, if it is somebody who created me, if it is somebody who controlled my breath, Even somebody who put all this together, the moon, the stars, I am begging you, give me a sign that you exist. And if you give me a sign that you exist, I promise you, I will keep seeking you. I might not understand everything about you, but I will try to understand how all this is here and keep asking you. Because I knew that the good God I knew, He's good and He's all powerful. But there is a condition too. I must trust Him that He is with me, because my part matters. And I remember after I asked God, you know, that who made me, I said, if you can hear me, again, I grew up as a Catholic. I literally could have gone like, okay, let me just say the prayers they taught me. But I wanted to know that. I want a relationship between you and me. And I don't even think I ever questioned if you are there. I remember asking, if you can hear me, don't let the killers open the door of the bathroom today. If they don't open it today, I will know that you are there. And if you are there, I promise you, I will seek you all my life and how you act. Because right now, I don't understand how children can be dying. Innocent people are dying, and then there's a good God. And then I thought, well, if I don't know Him well, I can't judge Him. So let me maybe get to know God, but first I need to even know, are you there? So I remember after I asked God, if you are there, don't let them find the door of the bathroom. Don't let them open this door. Just one little sign. After that, I didn't hear anything until about 5 hours later, the man who was hiding us, he came to the door. I thought they found us, and then he told us what happened. He said they made a circle around the house, and then they went in every room, under the beds. They went in the ceiling of the house with flashlights to make sure no one was there. They went on the roof of the house to make sure no one was laying there. That's where they found the people every day. And lastly, the man told us they came right to the door of the bathroom. One of the killers touched the handle, and before he opened it, he told the man, we trust you, there's no one here, and they turn around. How that happened, I can't really understand how to even explain that. However, when they left, it was really that time I said, I am going to know who is this God, because I can't explain what just happened. And I remember took the Bible, I asked him to give me the Bible, and I started to highlight, to read, to understand. First, I was asking questions like, why did you create me? I know for sure you are there, but why did you make me? And I felt like as if that nice voice was speaking back now that I was asking questions. Well, why do parents have children? Because look what I have gone through myself. And yet, look, I have children. But my question was, why would you put me in a place that is so messy, that have all these bad things happening? If you love me, why would you even create me in the first place? But I felt like, well, why parents have children? So that one was good. Then how long am I supposed to be here? In that moment, I realized that every single person who live on earth, they really are passing by. We are all passing by. Then again, I wanted to base it on the Bible. What is after this? There is eternity. And it's up to you how you do it. Live this tiny life where you want to spend your eternity in goodness, if you have done good, or evil in hell, if you have done bad. But I just remember literally taking a pen and drawing life in heaven, in paradise, which can be forever good and perfect, and eternity, and then living life here on earth, which is, let's say, 100 years. This became like a little dot compared to eternity. This little dot became like a blink in a lifetime compared, you know, to eternity. Then I remember saying, even if I suffer here, who cares as long as I go to a nicer place after? Who cares if I do good and remain good? And I remember starting to ask myself, let me think about athletes. The athletes, they work so hard. They go through so much pain for sometimes a reward that will last a short time. And they're happy in their suffering. They break their bones, they go back to train again. And when I was asking myself those questions, I wanted to know, so why they go back? Because they know what is coming. And why can they be smiling and happy and still do good? It's because they know the reward they're going to receive. And for me, I wanted to see that reward for eternity. And that's when I started to read, trying to understand what is heaven about? Oh, I mean, I really encourage people to read about heaven because it's a good thing to work towards. The roads are diamond and gold. There's no more pain, it's all a bliss. Even when I read, you know, about people who have gone through the near-death experience, they speak about this beauty that is just peaceful. But also, they review their life. They speak about that, they see a review of their life, if they have done good or they have done bad. So I really remember thinking about that. That helped me, as you ask me, how did I even survive? That helped me so much. Thinking about what can come, knowing that everybody in the end die, knowing that this little life is really short, even if you live 100 years, but there is eternity after that. Knowing the example like of these athletes who work so hard in pain and yet they are motivated, that's when I felt I can take what I'm going through here as long as I work towards a goal that is more eternal, and that is doing good, being good. And I still remember that time I started to read the Bible. I felt like every word was speaking about forgiveness. I'm like, now what? I can't forgive. Don't you see? My situation is much worse and it's different. So it was through the thoughts, they're trying to understand life, the meaning of this life, where do I come from, why am I here, how long am I supposed to be here, what comes after, then what am I supposed to do now, which is, let me do good. I want to face that God. I want to go to that heaven. I want to even face that review of my life and say, you have done good. It was really through those thoughts that, and prayer, which I prayed a lot, not like I prayed before. Before I felt like I repeated prayers, people say things, then I say things too. But this time I was saying things I know they are good and kind and had to come from my heart, that I'm in this life to be a part of this. Even as painful it can be in this bathroom, I have to be a part of this in a good way. To be a good neighbor to the ladies who were together, to be kind to them, even if we can't speak. We were 8 people in 3 by 4 feet. Sometimes being kind meant to give another lady a chance to stand up, to stretch, or to be on the side, to listen to her tears, to listen when she was shivering and scared. Let me see how can I be a part of this in a good way, in a doing my part to love.
Wow, that's really a suffering that I have never gone through, such a situation. Mm. Death is imminent somehow, and you are squeezed in this little room. And as far as I know, when you were released from that room because the genocide was over, you actually experienced or heard that your family was completely killed by the other tribe. And now when you look back, what did you feel about the perpetrators at that time, and what do you feel today? And did you ever wish for revenge and justice and so on? Or, what do you think about that?
So when I was still in the bathroom, I felt a lot of anger, and I felt justified. And again, the worst thing was the more justified I felt, the more angry I got. And I realized that anger was literally hurting my body. I felt anger. I still remember sometimes I would feel like my blood would be running faster because I was angry. My heart would be beating faster because of my anger. And I would be sweating out of anger. So I had a lot of thoughts of revenge, and I felt justified. So I thought of the maximum possible. I still remember thinking, well, I'm going to be a soldier, not to protect the country, which good soldiers, that's what they do, but to avenge my tribe. I thought I would fly planes when I get a chance and then throw grenades all over the country and blow it. And then I would kind of go through this too and say, well, if I do that, even people of my tribe will die. And I didn't care. That's where my anger was. And then I might die too. Well, I don't mind. You know, that's where my anger was. And that is, anger is horrible. What I started to realize was that the more angry I was, and the more these plans of revenge I had, and I would be in pain in my body, even if anger has a way of lying to you, as if like you're having some justice, as if you're making something good, and you know, like they hate you, I hate you more. you know, as if somehow there is equality or there is something good you have done. But it became obsessive. I would go through this anger and go back again. And I go back again. And you think you are done? No, I will go to the beginning again. And then I will do that. So my body was becoming just such a place of a lot of suffering because of my thoughts. However, I started to see when I was praying, when I was trying to find a meaning to this whole situation, meaning not necessary to understand the evil that was being done, but just to see the plan of my life. And what can I do as a person? The more I was praying, the more I saw there is heaven. Life doesn't end here. Understanding that everybody in the end die. What can I do with my life? The more I realized that my suffering was reducing. It wasn't as much. And I came actually to a place of forgiving when I was still in the bathroom because it was so painful. I remember one time I went on my knees and I begged God, you know, the God I read in the Bible, the God who can do all things, I'm going to challenge you. I want to ask, how can I don't want to live like this. I know you don't like anger, but how do I forgive? How can I be? I remember reading many stories in the Bible of Job, who lost everything. And all that was making me feel like, okay, I guess there's somebody else who have gone through this. Let me see how did he deal with that. This man was not angry. I mean, He kept loving God. He kept wishing good, not to wish other people to go through bad things. How is this possible? I remember also reading a lot about somebody like Daniel in the den of lions. These stories are stories that have happened. And then I said, you are the den of lions and they didn't eat you. So you mean this God can do this if you put your trust in him? So all that was that, okay, I'm going to try you. If you can do this, I'm going to try you. And the more I wanted to try fully to be that person who believes in God, I had a part to do too. And one of the things I kept realizing was, he doesn't like anger. He wants us to put justice in his hands, not me as a person to want revenge. Because you know what? I really don't even have the whole picture. Now that I have forgiven, after I was able to forgive, I realized that my anger was also victimizing even the innocent people. So I have become blind out of my anger. I didn't even care. I didn't even love myself. I didn't care if I die among those people too. So the anger was very unreasonable after I was able to let go. I realized what it was. It was painful, but also unfair and unreasonable. So when I was thinking about God and his ways, I remember saying, I will try to do what you ask me, but I will hold you to your own words. You said, if I do my part, you will do yours. And if I trust you, all things are possible, but I need to do my part too. So one of those was, let go the anger. Then my question was, how? How do I? I mean, for the 3 months we spent in that bathroom, the whole conversation was inside. It was like, my whole world inside was so much bigger. But I had to follow a few things for me to be able to claim also the answers and the promises God gives to be the ones to come through. So the anger happened. I was able to let go of the anger when I was still in the bathroom. I remember one time actually I was thinking about Jesus when he was on the cross. And I said, you went through that? Why did you? You know, I mean, all my life I went to church. But this time I wanted to understand, not just to be told, why did you do that? Because I love you. I felt you was like speaking back. I loved you. I wanted to save you. But why didn't you save us another way? You could have just come like the Pope, you know, dress nice and be just a powerful person and rich. And why this way? I literally felt like Jesus was speaking back to me. I went through this so that if you ever go through anything close to what I went through, remember, I was there before you. Learn from me. I went through the suffering too. But I didn't want to kill people as you're trying to. I forgave. I'm like, you're right. If I want to follow you, I better actually behave the right way you ask people to behave. And then see if what he said also will come through. And I remember the words he said on the cross when he said, forgive them, Father. I mean, take it as read as this, as we read as again a Christian from the Bible. He had nails in his body. He's hanging on the cross. I was still in the bathroom. And then he said, forgive them? They don't know what they do. And truly, again, if you take it from perspective of a Christian, of the person who believes, who killed God if you know who he is? If he's the one who gave you the breath you are breathing, which of course that's what we believe, why would you kill him? Even beside that, those who don't believe, who kill an innocent person? Why would you torture him that way? You know, what did he do to deserve? I mean, this is something I discuss with friends who don't believe. They really can agree, historically speaking, this man have done nothing to deserve what they put him through. But me now as a Christian, which I have more responsibility to believe what I know about him, I was watching him and I'm like, you went through that because you love me. That alone started to give me back my self-esteem. Somebody cared for me to a point of taking a bullet for me. And then you're right. Look how he's behaving. I can do the same. But how? They don't get it. And in that moment, I felt as if God was speaking to me too, and actually making me realize that people who are trying to kill you, they don't even measure the consequences that will come to them. Their own consciences. I mean, where have you heard somebody who just kill innocent people and say, I will live in a paradise, all is good? I mean, if I say something unkind about somebody, I really don't sleep. I need to apologize. I'm a Catholic, I go to confession a lot, or go just to apologize to God, or reconcile with the person, or do something about that. I regret it. So imagine somebody killing somebody who is begging them for mercy, which they did in Rwanda. That when I realized, no, they don't get it. They can't even live with their own consciences after what they have done. Second, look at now, you know, almost 30 years later, in Rwanda, people who killed, some of them are running in Congo, you know, in the forest, others are in prison. Obviously, they didn't know what they were doing. And I truly believe that for everything. If I treat somebody unkindly, I come to regret it. In the moment I do, I don't know what I'm doing. Because sooner or later, I will regret that. And that one I thought about the people just by the example of who Jesus was and what they were doing to him. No, they don't get it. The same for me. They don't even get the pain they're causing me. Who killed an innocent person? My father was somebody who was helping people in the village. He was a teacher. He literally, and my mom, gave themselves to the service of the whole community. And the truth is, to this day, people in the community, they actually built a little church and they called it after my dad. And those are people from the other tribe. That time, who didn't hide him, but now who say, we lost somebody who was really good for the community. So they did not know what they were doing. So when I saw that, it was really that time I realized anger does not help. It does not serve anything. My revenge will only add up to the number of madness. I still remember an image I felt in my, you know, like a, to see just like a imagination of what that felt like. It felt as if the world all of a sudden was divided in two parts, a part of love and a part of hate. And each one of us belonged to one of the other, those two. So a part of love, there are people like those who are peaceful, you know, people we know in history of peace, like Mandela. A man who got to prison for 27 years and comes out speaking about peace and, you know, reconciliation. People like Mother Teresa, a woman who was chased away from people who didn't practice the same religion. Why are you here? But she kept going. I want to help your children. They put her to suffer. They screamed at her. But she still wanted to help the dying people in those places. And on the side of hate were people like Hitler. Where people like, sadly me, who was thinking about revenging, you know? People like those who were killing during the genocide. People on the side of love are people like Gandhi. Again, we know in the history of peace, you know, the saints. And all of a sudden, I felt as if God was telling me, we all have the liberty and the freedom to choose where to stand. Either you choose to stand with people who are hurting and revenging and insulting and just like this, unending, you know, cycle, or on the side of love, where people, one thing I discovered on these people on the side of love, in that moment, These people have known injustice. They have known suffering. But no matter what they go through, they come out and defend love and defend justice and defend truth. Defend truth. So these people, they have known what it is to be treated unjustly. They have known how to be treated with hate, but it doesn't matter what they feel about how, what hurt them. Is what hurt them is injustice, is lies, is, you know, it is all the bad things like that. And they want to go against them, not about people who caused it. The evil is not the person actually, is the evil that is using that person, in that person. Because it's not one person who hate. And the genocide doesn't, and didn't happen just in Rwanda. Wars don't happen just in one country. When people accept the same horrible, evil ideology of discriminating each other, hurting each other, they are going to do the same. When I saw that, I felt I knew where to stand. I'm going to stand on the side of peace, on the side of justice, on the side of truth. No matter how I hurt, I will keep defending what is right. When I saw that, it is really that time I felt, oh, it felt good. It felt like a huge luggage was lifted from my shoulders. The luggage of anger, of wanting to revenge, of always just like dealing with this evil, taking justice in my own hand. I want to be on the side of love. I want to be like Mandela. I want to be like Gandhi, Mother Teresa. These are the people who are strong, not the ones who revenge. And I felt so free. And this is funny. I wrote this in my book, Left to Tell. I felt like literally my body was like lifting from the ground. I felt such a peace. The obsession of anger, the pain I was feeling about fear, my body, it was all gone. The moment I was able to let go of the anger, the moment I decided I am going to pray for the killers so that they can change their hearts too, because I believe in prayer. I am going, if I have a chance, to speak in the name of truth, of justice, of goodness, so that maybe they might change their mind too. As I change my mind, if I was on that side wanting to revenge, now I was on the side of wanting to speak about what is good, why not them? And that also gave me a chance to realize that nobody's evil. People choose evil, but they can choose otherwise too. We can change. People are capable to change. And maybe they need people who inspire them more. So that's why I truly believe that we should never be quiet when we know something good, when we want to share a good principle, when we want to share a lesson we have learned. We have to speak, because if I was able to change, why not another person? So after that, the genocide was over, and I was able to come outside. The war was over, because the bad guys who were killing in Rwanda, they ran away from the country after killing 1 million+ people. The very first night I came out, I was hoping that maybe somebody in my family was still alive, maybe was hiding as I was. And we were in a refugee camp, you know, where that's where the soldiers took us. The first hour I have to find out if somebody knows what happened to my family. And actually, I found out in that hour that everyone I left behind was killed. My mom, my dad, my grandma, my grandpa, my two brothers, my best friends, my schoolmates, my neighbors. I mean, everything we owned was destroyed. Our homes, our pictures. You couldn't even have something that reminds you that you had the family 3 months before. And I remember crying so much. And I didn't want to think about the things of God, because they felt almost to be true, too good to be true. The things of trying to make sense of life and prayer, it felt too good to be true. And I remember through my rosary on the side my father had given me, and I cried like 5 minutes. And after those 5 minutes, I felt as if somebody was holding me tight. These giant hands, and something was reminding me, hey, remember, the journey of your loved ones is over here on earth, but not in heaven. As you know, And your journey is not over yet here on earth. And you don't know how long it's going to be. It might be one more hour, one more day, 1 year, 10, 20, 30, 50, 60, but whatever that is, only God knows. You don't know. And the truth is, nobody among us can ever have the guarantee to live even one more day. Every day we hear somebody who passed away here and there. But I felt like the voice in my heart was reminding me, it's up to you how you choose to use your life. Moment by moment, again, because you don't know about tomorrow. You can choose to be kind or to be mean, to be uplifting or put down, to be loving or be hateful. But if you choose love, if you choose kind, I am with you. I will help you with whatever you need. I literally have learned to listen to that voice inside, and then which is a voice we all have, of course, nothing too, you know, strange. And nothing was like, oh, speaking from outside. It was just my heart inside. And something was reminding me, hold on to the good and you will receive help you need. I literally, within those 5 minutes, I cleaned my tears and I started to look around to see, you're right. I might not even have one more day to live. But how do I want to spend my last day, if that will be the day? And something was like, well, get to love somebody. I couldn't even know, how do you love somebody when you have nothing? We were in a refugee camp where we slept on the ground. And the food they can give us was the soldiers. The food the soldiers could give us was the powder milk they mixed with bad water, you know, or cheese, crackers. That's what they can give us. That's what they had to give us. And we had only one clothes. I had one clothes on my back for the past 3 months. I felt that nice voice in our hearts, the voice of good we all have, the voice of love we all have, that always encouraging and, you know, telling you to do what is good. Something was like, go speak to that lady who have no one to speak to, who is shivering and who is crying. Go just ask how she feels. If you listen to her, you have done your part today. You have loved somebody. Because I felt like the voice, the whole goal of this life was about loving. What do I have now? The strength I have today, what can I do? How can I love another human being? Because we have to serve one another. That's how I felt was pulling me. There was people who still have wounds, you know, after the genocide. And I felt God was in my heart, was telling me, go ask that child what it feels like, you know, if you can help. You know, go just put your hands over their shoulders. Go look at them and ask how they feel, if you can help anything. And I will do that. And every night, I remember we were in the refugee camp on the ground, under the stones and, you know, mud. I would look to the sky and pray, say my rosary, and I would tell God, if you choose to take me, I think I have tried my best. And that to me, that was everything I felt my job was, every day. And to this day, anytime I wake up, I really realize that, I'm still here, you know? Let me use another day to do something good. And what I realize also is that every day I have a different capacity to do good, to love. Because as a writer, now I have to choose what I write. And what I put in my books, is it useful to another human being? Is it something I'm sharing a lesson? Because we are all growing, I have to make those decisions when I'm writing. When I'm speaking, am I giving the best I can to another human being in loving? Not just to express anger or to express my frustration, but am I giving something useful to another human being? As a wife, as a mother, am I giving my moment by moment to choose love? And to me, that is the goal of each one of us in this life. And I have met people who definitely have a lot of capacity to love. Because again, this is for each one of us. One time, I remember I met President Bush when he was still a president. And he told me, he said, Bush Jr., he told me, you know, I read your book and your book have helped me to know how to deal with Darfur. And it was like a shock to me because when I was writing, I wanted to write for individuals, everyone who is watching, everyone who will read it. just to be able to deal with their own suffering, also to take the responsibility of the life they have today to do good, and never to feel that you are small or your responsibility is less. Even the person who just opened the door have done something good if they do it with love. Someone who sweep can decide to do it with love. And that alone is just huge. So when I met Bush and he said, your book have helped me to know how to deal with Darfur, where in Sudan, where a genocide was going through, it took me by shock. I'm like, you're right. You are one person, you are individual, but you have a huge responsibility. You know, you can change the life of a whole country. You know, that was just like, wow, you're right. So, and I think again, that is for each one of us, you know, every single person have the responsibility to love. And that is the meaning to me of life, to do good, to use my strength, you know, to wake up from the couch and go out and just be do something good. So coming back to meet the person who killed my family. When I went to meet somebody who killed my family, it was about 3 months after the genocide. I found a job, actually, in the United Nations. I was working in the main city. A lot of miracles, one miracle after another, really have happened for me to be able to be there, which again, the best gift I received from the genocide was never to neglect any moment. Not to spend my time complaining, not to spend my time blaming, but do something about it. Even if it means to pray, even if it means to send a blessing to the people, do something about it. It's not about complaining, blaming, you know the situation, learn what it is, but do something about it in your capacity. And then love somebody, care for somebody. So I went to see this man, and why I went to see that man is because people used to tell me where I was working that you seem happy. I mean, 27 years later to this day, I still cry, you know? So it's not like I miss my parents, I miss my brothers. So I have those moments that to miss them. But I also have come to realize that their journey was over, mine is still here, let me just work because I still have work to do. But so I will be joyful whenever I'm not crying, of course. People will tell me, there's no way you can be this happy. You just lost your whole family. How can you? And I told them, well, you know, I let go the anger. I feel good inside and I feel happy. People again convinced me, you can't forgive this quickly. It must be just a mechanism of forgiving. I mean, a mechanism of surviving. You can't forgive this quickly. And that made me scared. I thought maybe I might one day start to go crazy. So I better go to see if I truly feel like I forgave or if this is just madness. So I went to the prison. The head of the prison was a friend of my father. He opened the door and I remember he told me, you can ease up your pain. You can do whatever you want. You can hit him. I'm here. I will protect you. I'm like, okay, you know, but I still really didn't have a desire to hurt him. I just wanted to know, how do I feel if I see someone who killed my family and members of my family? And I will never forget, the man opened the door. This man came towards me and I started to cry inconsolably. This man was a good man before. I remember a neighbor who had children my age. I respected him like a father. Whenever I went to his house, I just, whatever he said, you know, I ate in his home. It was all good. And now he killed, and that's where he is. And what made me cry was mostly the situation, how he looked like, how bad the situation was. I remember his feet were swelling, his foot, you know, his pants was all teared up. He hadn't shaved maybe in 6 months. His hair was upside down. Maybe he hadn't showered in those months. He just was in a terrible situation. So I remember thinking about him before when he was a man of the family. It was as if the words I felt when I was hiding, when Jesus, he said, forgive them, Father, they don't know what they do. I realized that this man, there is no way he knew what he was doing. And I truly cried for him, for his family, for his wife, the children who will never see him because of the choices he has made to do evil, to hurt other people. And I reached out to him and I told him I forgave him. And when I told him that, the man who was there, the head of the jail, he was mad. He said, how dare? Don't you remember what he did to us? He kicked him out and he was mad at me. And this man also have lost 5 children, you know, and his wife, he was killed. So I knew he was feeling pain too, and I couldn't blame him. And he obviously he did not go through the journey I have gone through the same time as me. So I had to say bye quickly because he was really not happy. And this is why I even shared the story. A year later, this man came to look for me and he told me, thank you for that moment. I said, what? But I know you're angry at me, but he said, no. When you forgave him, you told him I was lost. I didn't know what to do because me, I have been hurting them every day. And I will come back the next day feeling the same anger. I will hurt them again, revenging my family. I will go back home feeling good. And the next morning, I will come back more angry. He said, I didn't know how to deal with the situation. And when you told him you forgave him, you are at peace. I went home and I was confused and I was mad. But he was more interested now to come back to talk to them, to see what they have in mind. And he said, the more I talked to them, I realized that there was still a human being who was also regretful for what they have done, who have lost, who was confused, who have been misled by whatever voice in their hearts or people around them. And then they did evil. And the man told me, I wanted to tell you I was able to forgive too. And the man who have lost his children and his wife told me, now I also want to tell you, I am engaged. I am going to get married again. And if it was not for that forgiveness, I would not be here today. I would not be happy today. So I wanted to come to thank you. And that's when I said, okay, now I can share actually what happened that time. So meeting the man who have killed my mom and my brother, it was hard. It was scary. But what was hard was to learn how to forgive, to learn to understand what is my part in this life, what is my God, what am I supposed to do, which is really for everyone. I don't know what is tomorrow. I don't have a clear path. You know, sometimes people ask me, so this was, maybe you were born for this, you were supposed to do. I'm like, I don't know. As long as I choose love today, there is always guidance. As long as I choose to respond with kindness, with truth, there is always next step that comes. And whatever next step that comes, I would just take it responsibly. But I never think that writing was more important than how I'm living also with my family, how I am dealing with a friend I meet today, how kind and attention I need to give them in that moment. And whatever my next responsibility is, I want to give the best I can too. And when pain is there, I know there is that temptation again. Oh, look how that person have hurt you. Look how they have betrayed you. Be angry. But I know where the anger took me last time. And one thing for sure I know, we can forgive. And forgiveness is freedom. And forgiveness is peace. And forgiveness brings you joy. So anytime I feel angry at a situation or at a person today, I go back to the knees and start to beg God, please God, help me. I want to forgive. Help me to let go of that. Help me not want to be the one to make justice. Help me to see this person as a person, not as their mistake. Because everyone has good and bad. And help me to remember that this pain of anger can go away and I can feel free because there is so much joy. And again, everyone will suffer. This is a part of this life. We all do suffer. When you think another person is having a good time, maybe in a moment, but you don't know what they went through last year or months before. So I really also through this experience, it has taught me to be happy for people because life is hard for everyone. Life throw obstacles and difficulties on everybody's path. And everyone have survived something or surviving something. I have met people in my journey of speaking and visiting different cities. I have met people who have killed them, I mean, who have lost family members. I've met people who have lost family members by suicide, maybe because of something another person will think is not so big. And that also have taught me to really value everybody's pain. If somebody tells you they suffer, please pay attention. Listen to them. It's not the amount and how big, how small, it's what they feel in their heart. Show them love. Show them understanding, because suffering is suffering no matter what. And again, everybody goes through suffering in some way or another.